Seek the spiritual realm where gods dwell. You have the ability to get there, perhaps even the ability to return. There you will receive the final truths of the heralds, the Radiance, and Honor himself. Go and seek it, Dalinar Kholin, if you would finish this journey. There's a lot of finality to the language she is using there. She keeps hitting on, these are the final answers. Go to the spiritual realm. You can get there. And who knows, maybe you'll come back.
Welcome back to Following Note on the Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 232. Paul, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, and a late Merry Christmas, if we didn't say that on one of our other normal episodes, to everybody. Yeah, excited to... This is the year that we will finish the Stormlight Archive, Era 1. So... Very exciting. Hopefully. We're a long ways. Yeah, hopefully within this year, we will finish the book.
Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing excellent. Our listeners, yeah, you guys have probably been in 2025 for a few weeks now, but this is our first recording in 2025. So, yeah, excited for what this year holds. End of Wind and Truth, finishing Stormlight. Unless he announces that there's another secret project appendice to Stormlight, which I wouldn't put that past Brandon, but probably finishing Stormlight Era 1 this year.
Yeah, we've recently read State of the Sanderson, or at least I've picked through a little bit, and Horn Eater is going to be in there somewhere, maybe a little over a year from now is when Horn Eater is supposed to come out. So after that, I think Stormlight will be wrapped up fairly evenly. But Wind and Truth, chapters 14 through 16. Paul, do you have two words to extract from these chapters?
I do. While these do sound funny together, they are separate words, and this is a bit of low-hanging fruit. My two words are sleepy time behavior.
Sleepy time is two words.
Nope, that's one word.
Unless we're talking about the brand.
Where I wrote it, it says I misspelled both words. So there's squiggles under both. So apparently behavior is also not a word, according to my spelling.
Why sleepy time behavior?
Sleepy time behavior because our opening chapter, we get lots of sleepy time. We get lots of people who are supposed to be asleep and are not asleep. All at the same time, it's actually neat how many characters we go through, POVs we get in that chapter alone. We'll talk about that more in detail. And then behavior, because we get some odd behavior. Yonagon is a character I want to talk about who I thought was interesting, who has the behavior. He's living to be an upright king and an exemplary figure, but he gets up when he's not supposed to and things like that. A change of behavior, the weird behavior of Wit and some of our other characters, etc.
What about you, Elliot?
My two words for chapter 14 through 16 are very, very relatable to the chapters. You're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. It's progression and vessel. And I picked them because, well, vessel, cultivation shows up, and we get some straight talk from the lady herself about the potential for new vessels. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Progression. I went for progression because mainly Shallan. In this first part of this book so far, I feel like Shallan is making a ton of progress and none at all at the same time. And I'm having a hard time figuring it out. There's some of these moments where she seems to be taking kind of leaps and bounds in her perception of herself, but then at the same time still kind of left asking okay, but what's next? So Shallan's progression.
What about the rest of the chapters that didn't make your words? Can we get a brief summary? We've had a request for that to return. So a brief summary of events for Elliot.
Yes, we do need to get back to giving you guys a quick summary of the chapters for those of you that read this weeks ago now, for all of you guys that rushed through the entire book in 48 hours, which one day I will read a Brandon book in 48 hours, but it's not this day. In chapters 14, 15, and 16, in chapter 14, we see Jasnah. This is the chapter that we got an early preview of a long time ago. And it's Jasnah and Wit is where we spend most of our time, although we hit the other perspectives as well. Wit kind of wakes up in the middle of the night, freaking out. He realizes that Odium has pulled one over on him. He's starting to put the pieces together that Odium is different. This is not something that Raze would have done. So he's freaking out. He's like using all the magic systems at the same time. The whole room is shaking. Jasnah's freaking out. Jasnah was already kind of freaking out, and that she's seemingly doubting her relationship with Wit kind of up until this point. So big scene there with them. We hit a couple other POVs as they're sleeping or not sleeping and get a little bit of their thoughts. Navani is like wandering around the tower, discovering new powers that she has. We learn, is this a chapter that like we spend some time with Queen Fen off doing things?
Things, yes.
Things, yes.
She's busy doing some things.
And
hanging out in a hammock.
Hanging out in a hammock. Chapter 15 continues with things happening. And Shallan is doing some things. They have a shower in the room, which is, you know, magic. I guess it literally is magic, right? You got Fabriel's powering the
Fabriel magic shower was pretty cool.
So they're enjoying the luxury of a shower. We got Shallan in there. She's trying to figure out how to deal with Mraes. She's having some conversations with Adolin, where Adolin's really supporting her. It's actually kind of sweet in parts of those. We get the kind of announcement that the offensives from the enemy are on the way. Azir, Thalen City, and the Shattered Plains are all under attack. What are we going to do? As Dalinar's on the way to that sea to go have that conversation with all generals, Cultivation just walks up to him in the middle of Eurythira and says, "Hey, we need to have a chat." And so they have a chat. And she drops some big bombs, which we're going to talk about here in a second. And I think that gets us through like 90% of it. So we'll get into the details as we go.
Sounds good. Thank you, Elliot. All right. I'm going to start off with a celebration. Our epigraphs are even more excerpts from The Way of Kings. If there is one Way of Kings fan, it is me. And I'm very happy about it.
Way of Kings.
In World Way, yes.
Yeah.
However, we are going to stay to our pattern of day one and do epigraphs every other day instead of every day. Or every week, I should say. So we will cover epigraphs next week of everything up until that point. So, yes, we're going to acknowledge that we have epigraphs from The Way of Kings. I'm very excited about it. We'll talk about it next week.
We continue to follow Noadon, as they say.
Noadon has come back around to being relevant, which I am very excited about. Which, I guess we can mention this. I think it is no coincidence that Kaladin picked up a copy, and now we're going to dive back into The Way of Kings in some detail. I think that's quite interesting. All right. So this is not a sleep chapter. We got the Jasnah Wit chapter before, but it either didn't include or was purposely omitted a lot of key details the last time we had it. So Wit wakes up, freaks out that his memories have been altered, and all of that was in the previous version. But a lot of the Jasnah I'm really doubting this relationship side was omitted from last time. What did you guys think of the personal side of this chapter before we get into like the heavier implications?
Personally, I was much less invested in the personal side. It is neat to see from these characters, to see from Jasnah and Wit. However, with Wit specifically, it's almost a little bit difficult for me to see into the personal side compared to, let's say, like Adolin and Shallan or other character relationships we have. It's more difficult for me to look into that with Wit on a personal level. I understand he is still a person in the stories, but he's put up as this semi demigod level, almost like an ambiguous level where he's not really a normal character in our stories. That it makes me, for me personally, it was a little bit difficult to, I don't know what I'm trying to say exactly. It didn't quite click. I wasn't like, oh no, Jasnah and Wit are having relationship problems. I kind of expected that. I didn't expect the book to close with they live happily ever after. It feels like a lot of summer fling energy with this relationship to me. Just given the characters, I mean, a lot could happen with Jasnah's character to change that. But to me, the personal side wasn't so strong, I suppose. I didn't feel particularly strong about it one way or the other. Like I said, it's kind of weird for me, I think, with the personal things with Wit. It just doesn't seem to fit in the story to me personally.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised back in Rhythm of War, wherever it was, when it was announced that Jasnah and Wit were a couple. I guess I was just kind of stuck with the what is he going to relate to her about? Where's their common ground? Hoyt is not really going to share common ground with a lot of people. Like, I don't know that I could kind of point to a character and say, oh yeah, that's a good partner for Hoyt. He's told us he's 10,000 years old. He's operating on kind of this level of that no one else is on. Who can go toe to toe with that? Not many people that we've seen.
He could probably date a fused.
Except for the fact that they're all crazy. But yes.
True.
Maybe.
It's Vinley, right? Sort of.
Leshwe.
Yeah, Leshwe. There we go. Now we're cooking.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if this relationship lasted. I think Jasnah would be on the same page as me right now. I don't have strong feelings about it either way. If Jasnah and Wit stay together, you know, whatever. But Jasnah joining a couple like world hoppy stories after Wind and Truth, that could be fun. But I don't think that will happen. I think Jasnah's on Roshar for the duration.
For me, it felt like the effort to put into this romantic relationship is almost, I'm trying to choose my word carefully. The word that's popping into my head right now is misused. I don't know if that's fully fair, but there's more relationships and things I'm invested in, such as Adolin and Shallan. Like, if something happens to their relationship, I feel like that would be a large deal. Not to brag, but I did get to attend their wedding at the World Hopper Ball, so I guess I have a bit more personal investment, which makes sense. But that's something that's been leading into for a long time. And like Elliot said, I was a little bit surprised that this came up in Rhythm of War, that they had a relationship going on. And yeah, it just seems a bit funny. I'm wondering how it will play out. It could play out into something much nicer, but right now I'm just a bit finicky on it overall. So I didn't pay too much attention to it.
The memory altering side of this section, we've actually talked about this before when we had Christian on from Lost in Roshar. Is that the chapter we covered?
Yes.
And we were all wondering, okay, when is Wit going to figure this out? Like, he gets the acknowledgement of, I've lost, what, 3 minutes and 20 some seconds of memory. Side note, I was entertaining the fact of trying to figure out some secret code of that amount of time means something. Like, what does 3 minutes and 23 seconds mean? I did not go down that rabbit hole. But at the time, we were all wondering, okay, so he understands he's been... What's the word I'm looking for?
Bamboozled. He's sure. Been bamboozled by Odium.
He's been hoodwinked.
Yes. And
so when is he going to figure out the full implications of that? And it appears to be now that he's going to sit down and figure all that out. So I am looking forward to that. Anything else from the Wit chapter? Like, he does a bunch of like really odd magic system stuff, like all within a paragraph. He throws a bunch of sand against the wall. He's like, maybe steel pushes her jewelry away, and then the room like resonates and rattles, and then, you know,
he changes appearance physically as well.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting, which doesn't surprise us. I think we've already identified that Hoid has been described as like different things in the past, but it almost, you know, it could be hinting at like soul stamps. It could be hinting at something else. I actually wrote down in my notes, have we eliminated the option of Hoid straight up being a dragon? We know he's from Yolen, and we've kind of been hinted that he's not a dragon because he talks to other dragons. But the like one defining thing we know about dragons is shape-shifting. He's doing that in this scene. Is that a possibility?
I guess I haven't really thought about it, but yeah, you're right. It definitely could be.
This is one of those predictions thrown out there that I can't believe I haven't considered before.
Yeah.
Because you make a great point. We think of, you know, Hoid as hopping around everywhere and all sorts of things and talking to dragons, but we've never thought of him being a dragon. We know that there's a dragon on Roshar, right? That's confirmed. That there is like one dragon on Roshar, or am I thinking of the Chondra? There's supposed to be one Chondra on Roshar.
There is one Chondra on Roshar. I believe it has been extra literally confirmed that cultivation is a dragon.
Interesting. Okay.
So yeah. I too was in the realm of like, have I thought about that before? Have we considered this? Could Hoid be a dragon? Does it matter? I don't know if it matters necessarily right now, but I wrote that down because it kind of popped into my brain as he's doing all the crazy magics and changing his appearance physically. You mentioned Chondra. That was another thing I wrote down here, because when we read the early version of this, there was a lot of emphasis on the contract. And he ended the chapter with like, I know an expert on contracts, so I'll go talk to them. And I jumped on that because we were like in the middle of Mistborn right at that time. And I went, oh, equals Chondra. Boom. He's going to go talk to the Chondra.
We'd like just finished Well of Ascension.
Yeah.
And that's the big like Tensoon or Sir contract reveal. And so you're like, oh, contract.
Yes. Yes. And I did not go back and like word by word compare, but I'm pretty sure there's far less emphasis on contract in this released version. And that final line of like, I'm going to go talk to someone got changed to, I need to go talk to an old friend. Or something. And then I think later we find out it's Frost, I think. And so my Chondra theory got completely shattered in this final released version of this. Tear.
Unfortunate. We're still looking for Waldo. The Navani section. I want to talk about the Navani section. She's kind of wandering around the tower, exploring some old tunnel that was previously locked or whatever. And two revelations or reveals that we get about Navani, or that she reveals about herself. A, she doesn't need to sleep. B, she's now like physically tethered to the tower. She's not allowed to leave the tower for more than a handful of weeks is the time frame it gives. I think that's fine. I just think it's very odd that we'd go for like super powerful bondsmith with this quirk and bug at the same time. Like, Navani now can spend every waking moment, every moment period, figuring out Fabrials and mechanics and engineering, what she's always wanted to do. But she can't leave. I thought that was a very odd, like, D&D style drawback and perk. What'd you guys think of that?
I'm getting similar vibes here. It does feel like power's getting ramped and ramped and ramped and ramped. And then Brandon's like, okay, this is getting a little out of hand. I need to add some checks and balances in here. And so he's like, artificially sounds too harsh. I think he does have some decent reasons here, but it does feel like it's almost like he's, you know, mixing up the cake and was like, oops, too much of that. Oh, let's balance that out with a little bit of this and kind of reining back in. Cause the tower, like Urethiru and the sibling have gotten ridiculously powerful. That's kind of been slow fed to us throughout this. It's like, oh yeah, the Windrunners can just fly around everywhere. Everyone has unlimited stormlight. You can't hurt yourself because it's just, there's life flowing through every little thing. Oh yeah, Fused walks in here, incapacitated instantly, you know, all this crazy stuff. And then the only way we kind of limit that is like, oh yeah, that only happens here. You leave the tower and you lose all your lifelight. You leave the tower, you lose your bond to the sibling. All these things seem to be like, that's a little too much. I guess that can only happen here at the tower.
Yeah, I was going to say, first off, I'm a bit jealous. I've always had the dream of what if I didn't have to sleep and I could just do things all the time. Would be pretty cool. So I'm a bit jealous of Navani here. And she has that feeling as well. She's like, but think of how much I could accomplish by adding so much time to each day, you know, which is really neat. And I'm curious to see how that plays out. I imagine we will see all sorts of new discoveries and, you know, Fabrial science things because of the time and because of her bond with the sibling as well. If time, I mean, we have 8 days here or whatever. So I'm guessing that any discoveries will have to be pretty sped up. But yeah, it felt a bit funny that she couldn't leave. I didn't think as much of it maybe as you did, Trevor. But you're right. What it actually made me think of is, why is Navani as a bondsmith have these pros and cons, and Dalinar's bondsmith seemingly doesn't? I'm not sure, but yeah, it feels like they're adding stuff to the new Radiance. Like, I feel like we understood what a Radiant did, and now there's all sorts of crazy stuff. Shallan is the prime example of that.
I think it really comes down to, I don't think this will have much to do with this book. I think this will be more relevant and more like theory crafting if Navani survives this book, or if we get a new Tower Bondsmith in the back five. You know, what's the technology jump from Stormlight Era 1 to Stormlight Era 2 if Navani's been sitting in the tower for 25 years just doing engineering for 25 years straight? What that would explain a huge technology jump from Stormlight Era 1 to Stormlight Era 2. But that's a big if, since we just, maybe 10 chapters ago, established that Kaladin is now the inheritor of the crown behind Dalinar and then Navani. So because Navani is in that contract, I think the odds that Navani survives this book has gone way down, not up. So I think that's really interesting. If Navani survives this book, what she can come up with behind the scenes when we're gone.
That's a cool thought, though. I hadn't thought about that. Of in a Stormlight Era 2, maybe it does start to get a bit sci-fi. I could totally see Urethiru becoming the mecca of science on Rashar, where everything technology kind of revolves around Urethiru. All the best technologies and universities and stuff are all in Urethiru. It all kind of come like feeds out of there, all kind of based on Navani's interests and her new abilities and what she could do with this in the next few years. That's a cool thought.
But she has to survive.
Correct.
The Yonagon snippet in chapter 14, I did want to highlight because I'm going to talk about this a little bit more next week, I think, but I'm really enjoying stopping and spending the time with our smaller characters, like B and C tier level characters, not like character virtue wise, but like page count wise. We have a lot to do in this book. I think it's really cool that we're stopping to spend the time with some of these smaller characters like Yonagon. I think that's a really good thing to do, even though we have so much to do in this book with our really prominent characters.
This is something I've been thinking a lot about. I honestly don't know why I'm thinking so much about it, but coming into this book, I kind of wanted a cut to the chase. Let's get to the big payoff moments we've been waiting for many books now. And so I didn't really, on my wish list was not, let's bring new characters into the mix. Let's flesh out more characters and things. I feel like we need to finish what we've started and go from there. However, I think the end of this chapter with Yonagon, I thought was really cool. Got my brain kind of spinning for a while. So Yonagon, it's really funny how it's written as well. It says Yonagon was asleep or whatever. And it's because he's the king of Aesir, right? Or the leader of Aesir. And he follows his schedule minute by minute every day. And this is the time he's scheduled to be sleeping. Therefore, he is asleep. But he's thinking. So therefore, these are the thoughts of a dream of a sleeping man, which is really, really fun. I enjoyed just how that was written. That was very clever. And he's dreaming things that a king such as himself should not be thinking. But it's okay because he's dreaming, right? And he's thinking about Dalinar and a lot of our other characters who are noble and basically and do big things, essentially. Don't just follow their little schedule. They are war heroes and major leaders uniting nations and all these fast things. He really looks up to Dalinar, but that's something he kind of feels on the inside, but he can't really show. Given the culture, the context of his culture that we learn in this chapter, sounds like those ambitions are not something that are looked upon highly by his people and his station. But I thought it was really interesting. And I think this is planting a really cool seed where we might see Yonagon kind of embody a lot of the things that we really like in fantasy and a lot of the things we appreciate of someone in a station who essentially looks to go beyond his station because it's the right thing to do. It feels like we're headed down that path where we're getting that kindled. I don't know. I haven't, you know, we haven't seen anything else from Yonagon, but it really got my brain spinning that I think it could be a really cool little additional character in here. I'm glad that these characters are being fleshed out as we kind of have these, like, you know, these like meetings and such. So all in all, if you asked me before I read this chapter, do you want to see more of these characters fleshed out? I would have said no. However, after reading this, my mind has changed on these characters. I think this was really well done and definitely a highlight for me.
Into chapter 15, we have an intimate scene between Adolin and Shallan. And it kind of ties back to chapter 14. With our preview chapters, we got 14 and 15 together, isolated. And so me, David, and Tim read them and were like, wow, that's a lot of intimate scenes back to back. And we talked for most of that episode about that. So what were you guys' thoughts about exploring showers in your theory, or do we not need to expound upon that anymore? I will say, Shallan is confirmed as pregnant, is on my bingo board, so there's a point in my favor.
It is moving that direction, yes. I was getting flashbacks to Yumi. Mild spoilers for Yumi, not too much. There's a hefty amount of intimate scenes in Yumi, and there's some awkward parts in there, but I actually at the end of the day really appreciated how Brandon incorporated that into the story of Yumi and the Nightmare Painter. It felt like it fit at the end of the day. I'm hesitant about whether this type of scene is going to fit in a Stormlight, but I'm very willing to withhold my thoughts until the end. I want to read the whole book. I want to see how far he's going to lean into this kind of stuff, and then kind of pull my thoughts together at the end. So I'm gonna roll with it for now. I'm getting some flashbacks of Yumi. I thought Yumi did it well. Let's see where this one goes.
I largely agree with what you were saying, Elliot. I'm kind of reserving any final thoughts as to honestly the relevance or things right now. My guess, like zooming out a bit to society at the moment, like I think most popular authors right now, the romanticy genre is very, very popular and has been on the rise for a long time. Personally, I feel like this scene and some of the other scenes in this episode, I don't think that they would have been a part of Brandon's writing if that wasn't such a fad at the moment. I could be wrong. This could have been in his notes and books for years and years. But I kind of agree that right now it doesn't seem to fit the setting that we've cultivated. Shard pun intended, that we've cultivated so far through this story. So I felt a little like it was almost a little cheap for that reason, because I feel like it was maybe thrown in to appeal to another audience. But then again, I understand that Brandon Sanderson, he said many times he writes what he wants to write, not because he's told to write something. So this is something he wanted to include. However, I feel like it was added for that reason, and it's not my cup of tea. Like Elliot said, I think also Yumi did it really well, and it contributed to the direct storyline that was had. That's what that book did. I don't feel like this book... I feel like that's not what this series is doing, I guess, like the focus. So it felt a little out of place to me.
I will say this. And for people who have read the full book, maybe this sounds really wise or maybe it doesn't. I think it is important to... I think there is a place to establish and make important that Shallan and Adolin specifically have a healthy, intimate, loving relationship. Like, establish that at the beginning of this book so that into this book, if they get separated or one of them dies or, you know, something happens, then there is a full emotional swing, because up until this point, the Adolin Shallan like marriage relationship has not been super explored. So I think establishing the fact that they are on the same page, they're husband and wife, they love each other, like that, I think that is very important to establish depending on where these two characters go.
I also got to say, along those lines, the dialogue between the two of them that's in these scenes is actually really good. There's a lot of really good, tender, romantic moments that it could have been had whether they had clothes on or not, but the words they're saying are actually a really great dive into exactly what you're talking about there, Trevor, of that marriage relationship, that love that they have for each other, especially the way Adolin is really pouring into and lifting up Shallan. There's multiple moments in this chapter and the next that kind of bridges into the next where Shallan is starting to think, am I okay? Can I do this? Adolin is with me. He's seen all my flaws and he still wants me. He still loves me. I think Shallan is starting to view herself differently because of Adolin. And these are some of the scenes where we get to explore that a little bit. That's what I was kind of going at with my progression word, is it feels like she's really starting to have a healthier view of herself because of the love that Adolin has for her, which that I do think is really cool.
That's true. The last thought that I have on it is this scene, like I said, I'm withholding judgment till later on, because you make a great point, Trevor, that this could very well set up their relationship further and we understand and see their closeness in case anything happens. You know, that's definitely going to be very sad if anything happens to them. Like I said before, I wasn't particularly invested in Wit and Yasna's relationship, but if something happens to Shallan and Adolin, I'll be sad, you know, like I'll be very sad about that. That'll definitely elicit an emotional response. I think these are far better and I anticipate more payoff than, let's say, like the Syl stuff in the past that we've read in this book. So, yeah.
There's one other thing in chapter 15 that I wanted to talk about. It's after the Shallan section. We go into, I believe it's Dalinar's point of view. And actually, there's a funny part in that Dalinar section where somebody screams out, "Quadruple the guards!" And I laughed out loud as I was reading it because it was a long time ago. I don't remember who it was or what even the name of the video was, but I watched a YouTube video that did a deep dive on anytime anyone shouts out "double the guards" in, you know, a movie or a fantasy setting, like what actually that entails. Because if you have day shift of guards and night shift of guards and off shift of guards, and you probably want to give those guys like vacation every once in a while, so you really kind of have to have like four full shifts of guards. So if you double, now you have to have like another shift of guards you're bringing in, maybe two. Quadrupling the guards is like, now we're up to like eight shifts of guards that Dalinar must have in order to be able to. Anyway, I laughed a bit when that came up. That's not the one thing that I wanted to get you guys' opinion on. The thing I actually want to get your opinion on is in this scene, Gavinor walks by with his like nurse, and it's kind of a throwaway mention, just an offhand comment. Oh, Gavinor's having nightmares again. I'm taking him to the garden or something to where so that he'll feel better. Is that of note that Gavinor is having nightmares? Remember, is a huge part of Rhythm of War, right? Kaladin was having nightmares for chapters and chapters and chapters. And now Gavinor is having nightmares? Like,
do you remember why Kaladin's having nightmares?
Well, it was Moash, right? Like directly.
Yeah. It was an infiltration of Odium and Moash to try to get to to Kaladin.
Ooh. Like, talk me off a cliff here. Is Gavinor now receiving the attack nightmares that Kaladin was?
Until proven otherwise, I'd say yes. Because there's nothing else that we could point to be like, oh, he must be having nightmares about this or that. It's got to be direct infiltration at this time.
It's also really interesting that the tower, if that is what that is, that the tower didn't fix that. We've seen the tower have radiation powers against fused and void light powers. When the tower's turned back on, Moash's pain returns to him, and Moash is actually like forcibly expelled from the tower, and all the fused, you know, fall unconscious or whatever. That's really interesting that if Gavinor is getting the Odium treatment, why the tower wouldn't solve that. That's very interesting.
Well, and maybe some answers to questions like that would be coming down to connection. Is there like a special connection that Gavinor has that is allowing access or influence of some kind?
Do you, Do you think Elokar's wife had more involvement there? Like,
what, potentially.
When we found Gavinor, he was what, three, I think, in or three or four in the Kolinar Palace. Yeah. And he's being abused by Voidspren or something like that. I wonder if that has more ramifications.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to bring up, was he's been in close contact with the Unmade, at least. So I could certainly believe that there's been some connection, capital C connection, established. I'd imagine that if that's the case, which I think we're right. This is a pretty good theory that I feel pretty confident on. I think that would be revealed in the future. I wonder if we'll see from... We might get... I don't know how that'd be revealed. What if we'll have a little tidbit of a Gavinor flashback? I look at the eyes of a child or something, but I don't know.
What if this is necessary, actually? We've been throwing theories out a lot for a long time. I think a lot of people have about, oh, Gavinor could be Odium's champion and all the like problems of that. I've always struggled actually a little bit with Odium being able to just like pick a name, just be able to say, eh, that guy, he's my champ. Like, why? Can you even do that? Maybe this connection that we're theorizing maybe exists, maybe that's actually important, is Odium needs a line to someone to get them to, you know, accept that championship. And maybe this is like the way in to enable that theory that's been out there for a long time.
Let me throw this. Oh, what did Dalinar just promise to do?
Oh no. Dalinar promises, oh yeah, we'll play swords later. You wanted me to play with you. We can do that later.
What if Gavinor doesn't even know he's the champion?
Oh.
What if Taravangian is like, yo, come up to the tower with me and you can play swords with Dalinar.
Say the words, Gavinor. Say, I will fight you.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll fight you, Grampy.
Oh, man.
Yikes. He does say tomorrow, at least, right? We'll play swords tomorrow. Yes. Or later. Does he say later?
He says,
like, that's important.
Well, that is important. Dalinar specifically promised that he'd play swords with him tomorrow. So day three.
Okay.
So okay,
that gives me a little semblance of hope. If not, then that's a crushing blow from Sanderson.
But it still is. Because what if Dalinar can't fulfill that? What if he doesn't follow through on tomorrow and he pushes it off till tomorrow? And, you know, stuff like that. And so then what if somebody comes by and says, oh, I can promise you quality time with Dalinar in 3 days from now, you know, that type of thing. Ooh, man.
I could see the last words before, like at the end of day 9, going into day 10, Gavinor being like, what about now? And him being like, we'll play swords tomorrow or something like that. And then everyone is like, what? No. I could fully see that happening. Man. Ugh. See, these are the details that it's really helpful, because we come together, we talk, we plan, we connive, we predict. But also, I didn't need to think about this. Not yet. We've got several days between now and then.
Man, yeah, now I'm thinking about that. But there's a cultivation conversation that we need to talk about. Okay, so cultivation finally talks to Dalinar for the first time since Oathbringer flashbacks. And for us, it's been like a month since we read this chapter, but for our people who are following along, it was last week. Cultivation just came out of the interlude with Odium. Do you guys remember that interlude where Odium has said, I'm going to save them all until there's one god, and Cultivation and Odium split on not friendly terms? Cultivation has just come out of that interlude, presumably, come to Dalinar, and she talks to him about like two major things. Honor is not shattered, or it's, I don't know if she says that in in full words. She's more like says, honor needs a host or a vessel. And then the second part of that is, as a bondsmith, you can visit the spiritual realm. Which one of those do you guys want to tackle first? Because there's some other things that she doesn't say that I want to talk about, but let's talk about what she does say first. And you can visit the spiritual realm and hang out with the past or something. I don't know. Like, go see other visions. And honor needs a vessel. Which one do you guys want to talk about first?
I would like to talk about this spiritual realm. What she it signifies that there's lots of things that Dalinar still needs to learn. And he's like, there's no time. And she's like, well, you need to go to the spiritual realm, essentially implying you need to go to the spiritual realm. And that's where you'll see things. I think Dalinar asks, like, oh, like more visions? Like, we'll do more visions and I'll learn more. I think even, does he... Sorry, I get the details a little scrambled up. You might have to correct me. I think Cultivation says either he needs to ask the Stormfather about this, or she says something along the lines of there's more visions or more things that Dalinar doesn't know about that the Stormfather hasn't been forthcoming with. He hasn't been bringing it up, but you need to ask the Stormfather about and learn these things.
Here's what she says. Seek the spiritual realm where gods dwell. You have the ability to get there, perhaps even the ability to return. There you will receive the final truths of the Heralds, the Radiance, and Honor himself. Go and seek it, Dalinar Kholin, if you would finish this journey. There's a lot of like finality to the language she is using there. She keeps hitting on, these are the final answers. Go to the spiritual realm. You can get there. And who knows, maybe you'll come back.
Yeah. I also did key into that line, which I'll talk about more in a second. But Dalinar then takes that conversation and goes to the Stormfather. And the Stormfather's upset that Dalinar wants more truth. And I'm like, okay, well, let's take a pause here. Who do we trust more right now? Cultivation or the Stormfather? Because the Stormfather seems to take the stance of these truths could be dangerous and you don't deserve them. It will do more harm than good to pursue them. And Cultivation saying you need them to fight Odium. Who do we trust?
Does she say to fight Odium?
Yeah, she says, hold on.
It's at least implied. It's at least to something along the lines of like to withstand or to stand against or to defeat Odium. I don't know if she says specifically fight, but it's at least implied that you need to understand more things to deal with Odium.
I think you are right. A dangerous one. The path to defeating Odium is not through your powers alone. It is through understanding. You need to see the history of the world.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, who do we trust more? Gosh, I don't even know. I don't necessarily trust the Stormfather because he's withheld information before. He seems to have honorable intentions with all implications of that word, but not maybe like the best decision making, perhaps. So like that almost makes me want to trust Cultivation more, but we've already discovered that Cultivation is pulling a lot of strings in the background and not necessarily aligned with maybe where some of our heroes are going towards. So do I trust Cultivation? Not really either.
Yeah, I've been wrestling with this. I think my opinion on this would change drastically if we hadn't read the prologue, the prologue to this book, to book five.
Right. Yes.
With the drafts and with the final copy, there's a lot of conversation that we had about this potentially being a storm faker out there. Still don't know or could, I still can't fully like rectify the specifics of what that would imply. Like Because Dalinar, I keep reminding myself, Dalinar is a bondsmith. He is, and there can only be X amount of bondsmiths, so it's pretty legit. It's not like Gavilar, who didn't actually have a bond or things like that. Like, that could be a fake thing. We've talked about that. Not the discussion for now. But that discussion we've had previously alongside this makes me lean towards the side of we should trust cultivation over the Stormfather. Because cultivation's position, being a shard, understanding Odium better, understanding the situation better. I've grown wary with the Stormfather, and I don't know if that's right. Maybe I'm being misled.
Here's a thing. What if the Stormfather just straight up knows all this? He knows that Honor's out there, and his role is like gatekeeper guardian. He's protecting the source of Honor, trying to find the right new vessel. Like that's what all this is about. Is a Stormfather is just out there trying to find the right new vessel for Honor. And so he's withholding a ton of information because he wants exactly the right person to take up Honor. So all of this is just like trials. First it was Gavilar, then it's been Dalinar. And he still hasn't, like, the Stormfather still hasn't decided, and apparently has maybe even decided not, that Dalinar is the right person to take up Honor. So the Stormfather's playing all the cards really close. At least that's what it seems.
I'm going to go ahead and get into this. I would be way more at ease with cultivation had she included information that she just learned. She just learned that, well, she knows that Taravangian is Odium, and she explicitly does not inform him of that. That is really, really relevant information that Dalinar needs to know, and she doesn't tell him that. She doesn't tell him that. True. And I'm like, okay, literally, why not? Dalinar's sitting there begging for more information, and cultivation says, go to the spiritual realm, you might even be able to return. Cultivation just got the reveal that Odium's plan is to have there be but one god. Now, I think cultivation's main motivator now is to get is against Odium, because Odium has now explicitly said, I'm either going to kill you or absorb you or, you know, whatever, or banish you. The contest of champions has nothing to, from cultivation's point of view, the contest of champions does not do anything. The contest of champions keeps Odium on Roshar either way, win or lose, right? The one outcome here that I think cultivation is now going for is the contest of champions is nullified. I think she's trying to nullify the contest. That way Odium leaves is what cultivation is going for here. I think this might be a trap that Dalinar may be stuck in the spiritual realm or die in the spiritual realm, or she's trying to mislead Dalinar to nullify the contract. That way Odium goes and kills other shards. She's trying to buy herself time here, not be on Dalinar's side. What do you guys think?
I think your logic certainly checks out. And I'm going to apologize in advance for my input here, because my input is less story logic and more like meta, what should happen, what needs to happen, and in our ongoing story logic. I am always frustrated whenever characters get introduced to each other and don't instantly tell each other the main thing. Like, I wish cultivation said, it's Taravangian that's now Odium. Like, you need to know this so that you could prepare and etc.
Yeah.
But I feel that that would pull the rug out from a lot of the questioning in the story. Hoid has his realization that this is not Raze. So our characters kind of, I feel like, have to discover that it's not Raisin, that it's Teravangian or something, which I would much rather Cultivation just tell him right now. But I understand from a storytelling point why you might not do that. And I don't think that would impact Cultivation's like motives or sides. I do kind of agree with you that Cultivation might be... The thing is, we aren't confident in Cultivation's motives. We know that she's against Odium, but we don't know if she's looking for the scapegoat of, yeah, let's go ahead and kick Odium off Roshar. I'm not worried about the other planets. I'm just worried about my planet. Or if she is trying to defeat. Because another thing that makes me, I feel, a bit biased towards trusting Cultivation here is we are seeing the matchup here, Dalinar versus Todium. And we know that this is now sort of rigged somehow with the contract. It doesn't seem like there's a way for him to win. I feel like if there is a way, you're going to have to risk it and take Cultivation's advice on this whole spiritual realm thing. We don't really know what it is, but he's going to just have to take a leap of faith and try to figure that out. To me, there's not another satisfying way for there to be victory there. We might not have victory, and if so, then that'll all come crashing down. But I'm thinking about it a little more metagame for how the story, I think, is supposed to go. But that's not fun. I like the way you're thinking through it a lot more, Trevor.
Well, we already have one reason to go to the spiritual realm. Now we have two. Shallan was already given the nugget of information that Ba'edel Mishrim is imprisoned in the spiritual realm. You can go get her. So now we have two reasons to go there, which makes me seem really likely that we're probably going to go there. I'm very much in the camp, though, of I'm not sure we can trust Cultivation. I like Trevor's thoughts a lot of the ends don't quite meet for what she's doing.
I'm really trying to look at this from Cultivation's perspective. Why is she telling this information? Why now? And what changed from the interlude? What did we learn in the interlude that she's now willing to talk to Dalinar? And that's where all led me is she's trying to expel Odium from the system just as a self-preservation thing. And that's where that led me.
I think we do got to remember that like in that interlude, she talks about Cultivation's approach. Her methodology is very close to like harmonies. She wants to not interfere as much as possible. She's Cultivation. She's a gardener. She's always going to play the long game. She's making the small pruning here, the small, you know, fertilizer there so that the end product is what she wants. She's not going to like take a direct role in what's happening. So it's almost like she has to do a little bit of guesswork. She's like, what's the right nudge to get you to the direction that I want you to go in? That's, I think, what she's doing here.
What about the reveal that Honor's not splintered and you can still pick it up? I read that and I was like, oh, okay, that's literally not true. But where did I get that information? Am I being lied to now or was I being lied to in the past? That was my initial reaction.
This is a really good question. I'm gonna double down here. I'm doubling downing and trusting Cultivation's word here that it is true and it is the case. If you would like for me to back that up with facts and logic, I'm afraid I cannot.
I think I'm going to dispute it with facts and logic. I think Cultivation is simply telling Dalinar what he wants to hear. Dalinar is desperately looking for some weapon against Odium, and Cultivation's like, yo, Honor's still there. You can go find it in the spiritual realm. And then he goes off and dies. Like, I don't see this ending well for Dalinar at all.
The thing is, I have too much faith in Dalinar's plot armor to at least make it to the Contest of Champions.
Okay.
I think after that, he could die. I could certainly see that being a fairly likely outcome. However, I don't see him dying before the Contest of Champions. So that'd be a crazy twist, and we'll really have to figure out what's going to happen from there. But I don't think he will. I think he's going to have enough plot armor to make it through. So that probably leans into my, like, yeah, just go check out the spiritual realm, go find honor, see, learn everything there is to learn, and then make your way back home. And then you'll be so much better for it.
I have one reason to believe cultivation here. I agree, it seems the opposite of what we've been told before. But she says in here, the Spren are not the splinters of honor. They were here before honor. And I'm racking my brains. I can't like tell you where, but haven't we been told that before? That yes. Spren predate the shards on Roshar?
We know the High Storm predates the shards, and yes, the Spren also predate the shards.
So she uses that as her evidence for honor was not splintered. And that part checks out for me. Like we've been told, oh yeah, the Spren are all like splinters of honor. And then I think this plus wherever I'm getting that other information, I think refutes that. That the Spren are tied to shards, they're tied to Adonalsium, they're little bits of investiture, like all of it's related, it's all linked, connected, if you will. And but that bit of information maybe makes this feasible, that she's right, and that honor is still out there waiting for a vessel. I'm inclined to believe this.
Wake up, sheeple.
Well, if this is true, I think this makes the whole rest of this book the giant question of who will take up honor? Who will take up honor? Like the end game just changed, if this is true. The end game before was who's going to fight Odium. Now that's the middle game. That's the median. That's the middle of the book. End of book. Are we trying to find out who is going to ascend to the vessel of honor?
I think so.
Do we start throwing names in the hat for that?
Then, it's going to be Sazed.
No, darn it.
Oh, my.
Paul beat me to the joke.
Yeah.
Do we want to? Go ahead, Elliot.
Very briefly, I'll throw up my other joke, but semi-serious. We'll see what the heck happens in this book. Maybe Gavinor will pick up the Shard of Honor. That's my prediction right now. Anyways. You can go say something legitimate now, Elliot.
Just to throw my final thoughts at it, I think that might help explain some of the secretiveness of the Stormfather. Like, back to this whole, why are they not sharing information they have? Stormfather falls in the same category. Why is he not all in with everything he has? He's playing very cautiously. Maybe that's because honor is still out there and he's trying to protect a vulnerable honor. That jives with the Spren theory to make me want to believe cultivation. Do I trust cultivation? Absolutely not. Is cultivation just trying to trick us all and down for her own ends? Very possible as well. I feel like these are the questions now as we head further into the book.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I land on. I definitely don't trust cultivation, but I also definitely don't trust the Stormfather. So I think Dalinar is in a lose-lose here, and I'm happy to be proven wrong, but that's where I land.
Do I drink the cup in front of me or the cup in front of you?
Yes, exactly. I have one quick question, and we I don't think we need to elaborate too much on this, but a quick prediction. When do y'all think Dalinar will learn, pick a day, day 10 to day, I guess technically day 2, we haven't finished day 2. When do you think Dalinar will learn that Taravangian is Odium? I thought this was going to be an earlier reveal, and now I don't know. We know it's not Raze. Our characters know it's not Raze now, or Whit knows it's not Raze. But when will Dalinar figure out that it's Taravangian?
I think it is either day 3 or day 10. And there's nothing in between. If I had to put my chips on it, I would probably say day 3.
So I'm going to go in between and say day 9. I think the night before, Odium and Dalinar have a chat. And Dalinar is like feeling good going into the contest. And then day 9, Odium appears. They have another heart-to-heart. Dalinar goes, oh crap, you're Taravangian. And then he's freaking out going into day 10 of the actual thing. That's our tension at the end.
I had the exact same thought, actually, Elliot. I think it's going to be an oh crap moment right before the contest, but not necessarily they walk out and see. I think at day 9, if not, that it'll be like a day 4 or 5 where they get to planning and then they're like, oh no, we have to totally rethink this. I think it's going to be day 9, like end of day 9.
Anything else?
That's it for me.
Do I get to cross off my bingo board that cultivation's the mastermind behind the plot?
I was checking on my bingo board as we were going, and I peeked at yours as well. I think so. I think that was confirmed in the interlude that cultivation is doing all the things and that she's masterminded this whole Odium thing. So we're there in my mind.
It will depend on how Dalinar handles this. I will save. First of all, I had read these chapters when I pulled that section on my bingo card, so that's a little bit of cheating. So I will wait to see what Dalinar does with said information, and then I will cross it off. All right, let's reconvene next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
See ya.
Sayonara.